The Survival Guide to Life, a podcast about how to win in life every second, physically, mentally, spiritually, financially, consistently.
Talking about the importance of having really strong credit in the current pandemic. A little bit about me. I was born in England, moved to America 25 years ago. Proud US citizen. I consider this to be my country. I live in LA. I've had incredible highs with my career. I've owned multiple companies and done extremely well, made a lot of money. I've also lost a lot of money and been homeless for 6 months. So I have a wide variety of experience. So in short, I've built 6 financial companies from the ground up, and I've recruited, trained, and hired over 10,000 people over those years. And my passion is financial education. So hopefully that's a good introduction for you guys.
So what was that like right off the bat, Steve? Being homeless, and what led into that?
That's a great question. Okay, well, I was in the mortgage industry in 2007. I was a sales director of a huge mortgage company, which employed close to about 4,000 people. I was in charge of them all. Life was wonderful. Money was coming in like there was no tomorrow. I was very wealthy. I owned multiple properties. And then if you remember, the 2008 housing collapse happened. And because of that, I ended up losing everything that I'd worked so hard to have. So I went from being pretty successful and financially happy to being homeless within a period of 8 months. That's how quick the money went. 8 months, that's how long it took me. And in 2008, like many, many people in the mortgage industry, the company closed, I lost my money, lost my houses, and had to live on the street without any family or any support. So I know what it's like out there, and it's tough, and it's not somewhere. If you're not there now, you definitely don't want to be there. And if you are there now, you definitely want to get off the street. So it was something that happened to me that really, I won't say scarred me, but actually changed me. And it's funny because all this stuff happened 10 years ago. And at times I find it hard to equate to the fact that it actually happened to me, but it did. Before I was homeless, this might interest you, Omar. Before I was homeless, yes, I was wealthy, I was successful, but I wasn't a particularly nice guy. I wasn't. I made money, yes, but I ran over people. I didn't treat people as human beings. I treated them more as a financial asset. And basically, I wasn't a really good guy, to be honest with you. I'd like to think that the 6 months that I spent being homeless not only changed the way I look at things, but changed the way I deal with people in general, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense a lot. So what did you notice in yourself that you treated people differently? And with what happened in 08 and what happened now, last year, I was at a seminar with Kevin O'Leary, and he said next year, this was in 1 year prior to the pandemic, he said the market's going to crash, and you should know history always repeats itself, and you heard it here first. So when that happens, be ready to buy, buy, buy.
Well, first of all, no disrespect to Kevin O'Leary, but he certainly wasn't the first to come out with that. He might have been like the 10 millionth, but he certainly wasn't the first. So, but he is correct. Stock markets are all cyclical, usually a cycle of 7 years. So in other words, we have a good economy and then it peaks and it dips. And that happens every 7 years. The current economy, by the way, it collapsed, as I just told you, in 2008, And it's taken far longer than 7 years to go down. In fact, we're now 12 years since the market collapsed. And still, technically, as we're talking right now, it hasn't gone down, but all the signs are there. Now, again, hey, I'm going to disagree with Kevin O'Leary, completely disagree with him. And here's my thoughts on it. And this is where I come in, actually. The pandemic, COVID, mm-hmm. has ripped out the heart of this country. It's ripped out the heart of the world. People have lost jobs. Businesses that have been 100 years old, I've seen, have closed. Family businesses have closed. Small businesses have closed. Big businesses have closed. Everybody's been hit. Now, here's the thing, Omar. In England, my old home, although I consider myself an American now, but in England, last week, they announced a second lockdown, if you like, and what they call COVID 2.0. And let me tell you this, Omar, the minute I heard that, the minute I know, regardless of which political person gets into power, we're headed for another lockdown. Yeah. Now, let me ask you a question, Omar. Since we've been locked down, and I know that you're podcasting, would it be fair to say that the only help we've had from the government is a $1,200 check?
Yes.
Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Right. So $1,200, which was given approximately 6 months ago, means that the entire country has had $200 a month to survive. Now, let me ask you a question. What sort of survival rate do you think there's going to be on $200 a month?
Not that much right. of a survival rate, but the small businesses, they had an opportunity to file for a loan that could get forgiven.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about that. So there are two different types of business loans that were available in general to people that suffered from the pandemic. The first one is called EIDL. I'll say that again, EIDL. An EIDL loan, which is a kind of SBA loan. First of all, you needed certain qualifications to meet it. And then if you were fortunate enough to get an EIDL loan, you've got to be very strict on the way that you spend the money. I read an interesting article about some guy who got close to $1 million. And the first thing he did was go out and buy a Lamborghini. And the second thing he did was call his lawyer and try and get himself out of jail. So the EIDL loan was the first way. The second one was the PPP loan, the payment protection loan, which is also very difficult. And by the way, the government stopped giving these loans out about 5 months ago. So if you were lucky enough to get one, that's great. If you weren't, guess what? Now, there are 333 million people in this country, roughly, give or take one or two. Not every one of them is fortunate enough to own a business and therefore get a business loan. So the thing is, what I would like your listeners to do as individuals is just take a step back for the moment and say to themselves, okay, if I lose my job, if I lose my income, what am I going to do? Will the government help me? Well, again, not to be political, and this isn't a political issue, but let's look at how the government deal with other things like Social Security. How's that going? They say it's going to run out. So anytime a government is involved in funding its people, there are issues involved. And there are also problems. Websites crash, people get the wrong information, funds go to the wrong places, et cetera, et cetera. So here's my question to you and everybody listening. If the worst comes to the worst, or even when the worst comes to the worst, how are you going to live if you've got no money? Because that, to me, is the single most important question right now for everybody in this country. How are you going to live if you've got no money? Could you answer that, Omar?
Yeah, you can't really live on just hope, you know? You would need to figure it out And the only way to do that is by working. And if you're in a lockdown, you can't work, you can't do anything, so you're just stuck.
There you go. And the funny thing is, Omar, you and I are talking about this now, and here's another thing that amazes me. Why is nobody else talking about this? Why isn't this on the news? Why isn't this on every single documentary you see? We are going to run out of money. And I can't put it any other way. So why do I keep pressing this point? Because here's the key, and this is where I come in. One of the things that I can tell you is that people with a 700 plus credit score don't even worry about this stuff. Why? Because the thing that they have is access to money. If you have a good credit score and it comes down to a crunch, you can get access to money. I have a 700 plus credit score. I have access to over $180,000. By the way, most of them at 0% interest rates. Why? Because my credit's good. So the key to all this is, if your credit is not good, guess what? You've only got a few months to fix it. And I don't want to be a scaredy cat. I don't want to be someone who says, hey, if you haven't got good credit, you're going to have problems. But guess what? Yeah. If you haven't got good credit, you're going to have problems. And I could put it another way, but that's the truth. And that's what I do, Omar. I just tell the truth. I'm not here to pitch anything, to sell anything. I'm just here to say, people, open your eyes. Ask yourself, if this carries on much longer, and you know it's going to, how am I going to survive? Where's my emergency funds? Where's my backup money? If I don't have any backup funds, if I don't have any money, what the hell am I going to do when it comes down to a crunch? And that's why, to me, looking after your credit is really important.
So say someone who didn't look at their credit and they've already got it in a rut, what would you do to tell them to get out of this?
What a great question. What a great question, Omar. Okay. All right. So first of all, let's just talk about credit in general, because you asked a really good question. So what's the difference between a good credit score and a bad credit score? Well, a good credit score, as I said, can get you emergency money at very, very low interest rates, sometimes even 0%. And by the way, I don't know how your credit is, Omar. It's not my business. But a lot of these credit cards that I have are at 0% interest rate. And not only that, but they offer something called cash back. So in other words, every dime that I spend on my credit card, I get some of it back from these credit companies. Why? Because my credit is good. But guess what? Credit companies do not like me. Credit bureaus do not like me. Why? Because I've got good credit. They don't like me. They like people with bad credit. Why? Because people with bad credit, if they do ever get a loan, the interest rates they pay are so high, that's how these credit card companies make all their money. Think about it for a minute. Do they prefer giving out a credit card with zero interest rate or something like 24% interest rate? Of course.
Definitely the 24%.
Right. So we agree with that. Now, here's something that you don't know, and most people don't know. Credit and money actually is a game. That's all it is. It's a game. It's knowing how to play the game that's important. So just before I explain that, Omar, let me ask you one quick question. What do you think the biggest difference is between rich people and poor people? What's the one biggest difference, do you think?
Assets.
Okay. And people say that, either assets or money. Rich people have lots of assets and lots of money. Poor people don't. You would think that's the right answer, but actually, it's a wrong answer. The right answer, biggest difference between rich people and poor people is information. That's all it is. Rich people have access to information that people like you and I don't. For instance, say you've got $10 million, Omar. Do you think that you will put that $10 million in Chase or Bank of America or Wells Fargo and help yourself to? Of course you wouldn't. You would know these high interest accounts, your accountant would be putting you everywhere, would be safeguarding you, you'd be making sure you pay minimal taxes. That's what I mean by minimal information. Now, listen to this, because it's big news. You talk about people with bad credit, so I'm going to open your eyes a little bit. Do you know that 79% of all credit reports have errors in them? Did you know that, Omar?
No, I didn't.
No, I'm sure you didn't. Do you know that over 61 million Americans have a credit score below 700? Did you know that? In fact,
no, I didn't know.
Yeah. In fact, 33 million Americans don't even have enough credit to generate a credit score. And 24 million Americans have no credit file whatsoever. So all of that is very interesting. Now, here's the magic sauce. If you sat there thinking these credit bureaus are very powerful, they are. They're very powerful. They dictate whether you've got good credit or bad credit. They dictate whether you can get a loan, buy a house, get a job, rent an apartment, everything you can think of at the moment. If your credit score is good, great. Credit score is bad, you're either going to pay a lot more interest or you're not going to be able to get what you wanted in the first place. Now, here's the big news. The credit bureaus are governed by something called the Fair Credit Reporting Act. Say it again, it's called the Fair Credit Reporting Act. Now, in that act, what the bureaus have to do is guarantee there are no errors on your report. Now, remember, 79% of Americans have errors on their report, and that's what's pulling their credit scores down dramatically. We can challenge, not can, we do challenge everything under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. Now, you've got to know what you're doing, and I'm making a general overall statement, but using that act, we can immediately boost your credit score. Now, let me tell you a quick question, Omar.
Okay.
Not a quick question, quick story. We have a lady who joined us for credit repair in January of this year, and her credit score was 480, one of the lowest credit scores I've ever seen, 480. And when she called us, she said, I know my credit's bad. I know it's bad. It's actually horrible. But I haven't ever got a credit report. I don't know how to read them. I don't know what to do. Will you help me? Now listen to this story. So we got her credit report, and what we noticed was three things. Number one, there were a lot of errors on there in her credit report. Misspelled names, misspelled accounts, wrong numbers, etc., etc. But worse than that, there were duplicates all over the place. So it looked like she was applying for twice the amount of credit that she actually was. And everything was a duplicate. Within 45 days, we changed that lady's credit from a 480 to a 710. 480 to a 710. Now, here's the thing. If she learned the system and she knew what she was doing, she would have got there eventually herself. So it's not all down to us. She would have got there herself, but she didn't know it. And so she's walking around telling everybody, hey, I've got 480 credit. When she paid all the bills, she'd been a responsible person. She'd done everything she was supposed to do. But still, the bureaus got all her information wrong. And because of that, she couldn't get an apartment. She couldn't buy a car. She couldn't get a house. Everywhere she went, she was denied for everything, when in fact, she'd done nothing wrong. So it's stories like this that are very, very common. Now, getting to that 700 mark is critical, because once you're there, you never have to apply for anything again. people are sending you offers through the mail, by email. Please take our credit card. Please take our American Express or whatever, whatever, because you're a good customer. And by the way, we'll give you this if you take it, and we'll give you that. They offer you the world. It's a different lifestyle to people with under 700 credit. Does that all kind of make sense, Omar?
Yeah, that makes sense. But what I was thinking about is, what about the people who their 480 credit, it wasn't a mistake. What about those people? Well, do they just stay in the rut?
That's a great question. Okay, well, first of all, bear in mind, and I hate to keep repeating this number, 79% of this country has credit reports with errors in them that are keeping them down when they should be up. So assuming, just say, for instance, you become a client of ours, we challenge the bureaus, we try to move your credit up legally, but we just can't. Then you're in a serious situation. So the best advice for you, not for you, Omar, I mean, for anyone with a 480 credit score. First of all, I don't believe that anyone who's on 480 has to stay on 480. We've never lost a sit. We've been in business years. We've never seen anyone come to us with a low credit score and it stayed at that credit score. It's never, ever happened. But assuming it does, then unfortunately, that person has to find a guarantor, someone who will co-sign on things for him or her. So if they do need a loan, maybe a parent or a sibling or a husband or wife or a close friend, someone who will co-sign for them. So don't wait until you've run out of money to start looking for these things. Start looking today.
Or even to go beyond, like just having someone say they'll sign on a loan. I don't think many people would do that, but couldn't they write you under their credit as authorized user? Yeah. And that would boost your credit score?
Well, absolutely. But I mean, if you add someone as an authorized user, it's not an instant bump, but it will go up. You're right. So adding authorized users, some people even talk about purchasing trade lines, and I don't want to get into that, but just a quick word of warning on trade lines. If somebody writes to you and says, hey, we can put you on a trade line so your credit goes up, be very careful because it's illegal. It is absolutely 1,000% illegal. And if you're caught, you'll get into serious trouble for it. It's a criminal activity. So I definitely don't advise that. But yes, if you have a family member who wants to add you as an authorized user, now, just being added as an authorized user isn't going to bump your credit, just so you know, Omar. It has to be from either a spouse or a family member. So if you acted as an authorized, if you said to me, Steve, I'm going to help you, you can be an authorized user on my credit card, the bureaus are going to go, big deal, big cheese, your score's not going to go up. Or if it does, they'll put it up a couple of points because they kind of have an idea what's going on. Now, if your name was Omar Super and you put me as an authorized user, then yes, that will definitely expand my credit. But there's a lot of tricks that we have, a lot of things that we can do that help boost the credit apart from just challenging. For instance, we work with another company that reports rent. So if you're paying your rent every month on time, we can report that to the bureaus and that will boost your score. We have certain credit cards you can sign up for that are secured, that basically have very small minimums. And if you keep paying them on time, that will boost your score. So there are a lot of elements involved in boosting. But as I said, we've never had a single client who's come to us with a very, very low score that we haven't improved it, you know, quite substantially.
Okay, so when you were coming out this homelessness, you say 2008, and trying to get back into the flow of things, what was your mindset like?
Great question again. Okay, so I don't know. I don't specifically want to talk about religion, to be quite frank with you, because I believe, rightly or wrongly, and it's my belief, that religion is a very private thing. So I'm not going to talk about religion now, but I will tell you about the 6 months in the car and what I did. So 6 months, when I say homeless, I was living in my car, to be quite frank with you. I had all my stuff in my car, but my car was, I couldn't even keep up with the payments of the car. So in fact, the car company were looking for me to try and repossess the car, and then I would have been truly homeless. But instead, I was living out the car. So I remember the day very, very clearly. And I remember talking to God, to be quite frank with you, and saying to him, look, you know I've not been a great guy throughout my life. I've probably done some things that you don't, well, I've definitely done some things that you don't approve of. And I've definitely treated people in a way that's not godly, that isn't very respectful. If I get an opportunity to get out of this situation, I promise you, God, I will be a different person. I'll be a person that stops to help the homeless. I'll be the person that when somebody who works for me says, I'm ill, I can't come in, I don't just say, okay, speak to you tomorrow. I want to know what's wrong with them. I want to know if they've got family, if they've got support. I'm a different person. I'm a humanist, having gone through this experience. And it's very, very life-changing. You know, to speak about it for a couple of minutes on a podcast to me doesn't do it justice. It was a life-changing affirmation that happened to me. And by the way, just so you know, Omar, it's gotten me into plenty of trouble. My friends, when homeless people come to me, if I'm walking down the street and I see a homeless person or a homeless person approaches me and asks for money, without even hesitation, I give it them. And it's caused me problems because friends I'm with, or whoever, have said to me, Steve, don't give these people money. They're going to use it on drugs or blah, blah, blah. And I always say to my friends, you know what? I do not judge. If people ask me for something and it's within my power to give it them, then definitely I'll go out my way to give it them. And my company is actually called Compassionate Credit Repair. Why the word compassionate? Because I like to think that we deal with everybody in a very compassionate way. You're not just a number to us, you're a person with issues and challenges, and you want to achieve final goals. We care about that goal. We care about you, we care about your journey and how you got there, and we want to help get you to a better place. So this is not just about credit repair, it's about dealing with people in a humane way so that they feel appreciated, that they don't feel less than anybody else. Just because you've got less money than a millionaire doesn't make you a worse person or a problem person. It means just financially you're not where you would like to be. And that's how we tend to deal with individuals, if that makes sense, Emma.
No, that makes sense. But I always say you can tell a lot about a person's character, the way they conduct themselves in front of someone who can't do anything for them.
I like that. I think that's awesome. I really do. So, can you repeat that, Omar? Because it's definitely worth repeating, please. Yeah,
you can tell a lot about someone's character, the way they conduct themselves in front of someone who can't do anything for them.
I love that. I love that. And you're right. You know, it's definitely changed my life into understanding what it's like to be a giver rather than a taker. And one thing I can tell you is, and I think you obviously know this, Omar, it takes a lot more strength to be a giver than a taker. Takers go through life just taking stuff and not even thinking about it. Givers really put emotion and heart and soul into what they do. And don't get me wrong, Omar, I am not saying I'm a good guy, I'm the best guy on the planet, you know, it's been life. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is I am very consciously aware of how I treat people. And I wasn't prior to being homeless, if that makes sense.
No, that makes sense. And I feel like sometimes life, it throws us that curveball, so to say, or it takes something like that to like shake us up or kind of wig us out. Like, you know, we don't want to talk about religion, but just like, just for example, like you could say Jonas and the whale, you know, just situations like that. And I think that's just in our innate nature that until something really happens, we kind of don't wake up from this like sleep.
Oh, Omar, of all the things that you've said today, and every one of them has been really great, I think that's the most powerful. And that's the point of me coming on your podcast, because I am telling you, if you've survived COVID to date, if it gets much worse, how are you going to survive it? Don't wait until you've got nothing in your bank account and you're in a really bad situation before you start panicking. And that's one of the differences between people who are prepared for what's coming down the line and people who are not prepared. If you're sat there and you have a bad credit score, don't give up. Don't give up on yourself, because it might be an error. There are ways to improve it. There are ways to work it. But let me tell you this, we're now in October, nearly the end of, well, mid-October. So we've got 2.5 months until next year. And I'm telling you, next year is going to be a lot trickier and a lot more worrier than this year. If you think we've been through a bad year this year, you ain't seen nothing yet. And hopefully Kevin O'Leary would agree with that as well. But you know what they say, Omar? That there's a big saying. In every challenge, there is an opportunity. Every challenge. You know, the 2008 market collapse where virtually all of America took a haircut. I went through a very bad time, but so did the whole country, to be quite frank with you. There is a film called The Big Short, which is a great film and I highly recommend it. And The Big Short is about a group of people, about 8 people, who figured out what was going to happen to the stock market, and they betted against the stock market. Christian Bale was in it, Brad Pitt was in it. It's a great film if you've not seen it. Even if you don't understand trader life, it's a great film. And it's a story how these guys bet against the system and cleaned up in 2008. So in every challenge, and people do have a challenge, if you've got bad credit, don't just sit there. You know this, Omar, let me tell you something. I want you, when I say bad credit, I'm going to give you a number here. I want you to imagine that you and I go to the same car dealer on the same day. Now you, Omar, have 725 credit score. On the other hand, I have a 610 credit score. So we both go to the dealership together, and we both say it's a Honda dealership, and we like the Prelude or the Accord or whatever. We like a Honda. So we both like the same car in the same color. And we both apply for finance for the car. And we both put the same amount of money down. And we both take out a 6-year car loan. Over those 6 years, because of my credit and because of your credit, I will pay $16,000 more in interest than you will. $16,000. Do you think the car company would love you or they'd love me? Of course, they love me more than you because I've got the bad credit. But it doesn't have to be this way. Don't be an ostrich, guys. That's my advice to you. Don't stick your head in the sand and think it's all going away. Do something about it. You can call me if you want to chat generally, but it doesn't have to be me. Get some sort of credit repair. Do me a favor. Go out there, put your house in order while you still have chance, because we're running out of time. There you go, Emma. Sorry about that.
No. So say someone who wanted to repair their credit.
Yeah.
What would those services cost them?
That's a great question. Well, first of all, let me just mention our company on our website, because all the costs are on the website. But the company is called Compassionate Credit Repair. And our website is, obviously, compassionatecreditrepair.com. where there are all sorts of prices depending on what you're looking for. But for the average person, the cost is $129 a month. Now, in that $129, not only would you get credit repair, but you would also get credit monitoring. So in other words, if people are trying to steal your identity or anything like that, you would also be monitored for the period that you're with us. It also means, by the way, that we send out a lot of letters to creditors and bureaus on your behalf. Each one of those letters has to be a certified letter, which costs around about $7.99 a letter. And we send hundreds of these out on your behalf. So by the time we're finished, even though 129, whatever, sounds like a big number, by the time we finish sending you letters and paying for everything, it really isn't much that's going in our pocket. But I'm okay with that because I want to help people. And thank God I'm in a financial position to do that. So that's the answer to your question. Now, bear in mind what I just told you about the $16,000 interest. If you and I buy the same car at the same dealership over the same time, you really think $129 a month is a lot of money? Some credit repair companies charge you thousands before they even do something. We don't. And by the way, we also give you access or a portal to our work so you can see which letters have been sent out, how you're doing, how you're improving, which cards you have to apply for, which cards you've got to get rid of. So it's a side-by-side training and help experience, not just raising your credit. That's not our goal. Our goal is not to just raise your credit, it's to teach you how we raised your credit so that you don't dip down again and you know what to look out for.
Okay. So as we just slowly wind down, I just kind of wanted to touch on something else. I know we talk about credit, but we'll keep it financial. Now, you talked about trading. Now, The Big Short was one of my favorite movies.
Oh, there you go. You like it, Omar? Yeah. Great movie, isn't it?
Are you a big trader, like options or stock?
No.
So did you hear about the young guy from Robin Hood who killed himself? I wanted to hear your take on that and how he thought he lost everything, killed himself. Then his family found out he was a glitch in the system.
Well, I mean, first of all, it's a tragic story. There's no doubt about it. Any way you look at it, it's tragedy. Whether it was making money or losing money or glitches in the system, anyone who takes their own life, it's tragic. My response to trading is, and by the way, I follow the markets very closely, but not for the reasons that most people do, because I'm involved in other finance and the market is affected by it. But I have never ever wanted to invest in the stock market ever. And let me tell you why. It's a short story, but it'll give you a great indication. I have a friend who is a stockbroker. He's a really, really good stockbroker and made a hell of a lot of money, hell of a lot more money than I've ever made. And he really, really knows the market. So going back about 8 years ago, he called me up and he said, "Steve, we've been buddies for a long time. I'm going to give you a stock tip. You never invest with me. I know that you got money. I want to get your money. So I'm going to give you a free tip. Let me give you a tip. Put a bit of money into this and you'll see how you do." So I said, "Okay, what's the tip?" And this is what he said. I remember it. Dell Computers. So I'm thinking to myself, Dell? That's a little bit weird. Now, this was just after, forgive me, my mind has gone a little bit blank. They had a female CEO for a hell of a long time, Dell, whose name I can't remember. She actually ran for the Republican nomination. I'm sorry, her name escapes me. It's been a long day. But anyway, he told me they're going to bring in a new CEO. This CEO is a winner. He turns around companies. Dell were in tremendous problems. This is the guy that's going to come in and shake them up within 30 days. And any money I invest today on Dell, it's going to do the trick. It's going to be great. Dell is the way to go. So here's what happened. And I've got to be careful the way I say this because I don't want to be sued for anything. But they did bring a CEO in, a particular CEO whose name I'm not going to mention. I do know his name. And unfortunately, well, fortunately, he did improve the standing of the company. He came in, it was like a rocket ship. Everything he did was turning to gold. And I thought to myself, you know what? My buddy is right. He knows his stuff. And then one day I'm sat at home a few days later, I'm watching Fox News or one of them, and I can see a picture of him in the background, the CEO. So I'm not listening, I'm just carrying on my work thinking, hey, there's my guy, there's my CEO, he's great. Unfortunately, I didn't listen to the news. I should have done, but I didn't. And in fact, I got very busy, and it was only 5 days later when I found out that this whiz kid had been fired by Dell for sexual misappropriation. Oh. Guess what happened to Dell's stock? Now, the reason that I don't like the stock market, and it's just my personal reason, is if it was played by simple rules, in other words, if a company's profitable, they're increasing their profits, their share value goes up, et cetera, I would definitely be in the stock market. But my issue is there are so many external issues outside simple P&L things that can affect a stock price. It scares the hell out of me, to be honest with you. That's just my take. And that's not my area of expertise. I do have areas of expertise. Stock market is not one of them. I cannot predict if the stock is going to go up or down. And it's too risky for me. I'm more a conservative, more conservatively fiscal than trying something like the stock market. Just my view anyway. No,
that's a very good take. And I think it's lovely and important what you're doing. You know, not many people take this into consideration. So I want to thank you, one. And then for a second time, how can someone connect with you and get their credit carefully repaired?
Okay. So first of all, again, the name of the company is Compassionate Credit Repair. The website is compassionatecreditrepair.com. But let me give you my phone number, because if I want people to know that they can call me at any time. And I don't really care if you don't want credit repair, but if you have a general question, I'm more than happy to be here to help you. I'm not a salesman. I'm not going to talk you into anything. It's either something you want or something you don't. But if you have a question relating to credit, you don't want to sign up, but you still want to ask your question, I'd be more than happy to help. And that's why I talk about being in business and giving without thinking about the money aspect, but more about being a good person and running a good company in a clean way. The money will take care of itself. I'm convinced of that. So if anybody wants to call me, my toll-free number, I'll give you two numbers. The toll-free one is 888-702-3426. That's a toll-free number. And if you want to get me directly, 818 I forgot my own number. Sorry. How embarrassing. 818-620-5317. Sorry about that. 818-620-5317.
So are you in the valley?
Yeah, I am. I'm absolutely in the valley.
I used to live right